AFA Action takes attacks on the family seriously. The enemies of the family constantly employ new tactics to try to sneak past our radar. They know if we stand together, their evil plans will fail. Your gift to AFA Action allows us to stay vigilant against their onslaught. And if you give this month, you'll receive access to the Cultural Institute video, When Your Faith is Illegal, by Frank Harbor on AFA Stream as our thanks. You can make your gift today at afaaction.net.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR on this Tuesday, October the 21st, 2025. I'm Tim Wildman. Joining me in studio is Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
You're a brother, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
I am.
We're all brothers here.
We're all
and
family.
Our brother Ray is in Ray Pritchard's in Kansas City. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How are you today?
It's good. We're getting a little rain here at our studios right now. It's going to pass, but fall is in the air, and fall's already arrived in Kansas City, right?
It was 44 degrees here a few hours ago, a couple hours ago. It's up to a balmy 52 degrees today.
Balmy?
Are the leaves changing color there?
Yeah. Yep. But basically, we've had a lot of hot weather in September and October,
right.
But I think that's gone now. I think fall has arrived here in Kansas.
Yeah.
Well, all I know is in Mississippi, where our flagship station is for the network, I never say fall weather is finally here because it's liable to turn hot and you're liable to be wearing shorts
yeah.
at Christmas time.
But, you know, the thing that we, many of us have to not look forward to is winter.
Yes.
Because winter will be here before you know it.
That's right.
My attitude will change, and Ray will go to Florida now.
That's exactly right.
Where the Lord will lead him.
That's right. The Lord has led us to Florida.
For the winter, right?
For the winter, right?
Take the exit on I-22 and pick me up, Ray.
Yeah.
That's right. I'll stop, pick you up, Chris, and we'll head
Whoever
down.
Wants to go, right?
No, you and Marlene did make a decision a few months ago. I mean, you shared it on the radio about you're going to be snowbirds now, right?
That's right. In fact, starting in 2 weeks, early November, I'll be doing this program from our park model at Word of Life Palm Grove in Hudson, Florida.
Oh, so you're going to be living there during the winter months.
He's
wimping out.
I thought we were just talking about where he's going to do his Bible teaching at the conference.
I've had enough snow. I've had enough bad weather.
Listen, Brother Ray, an Alabama boy, has paid his cold weather dues.
Yes, I
feel like it.
Well,
yes,
up in Chicago.
That's what I'm saying. How many years did you spend in?
Almost 17 frigid years.
And this is back before global warming.
When it was really global. A lot of global cooling.
The first time I ever saw snow at Christmas time was in the late 90s. My mom grew up in Zion, Illinois, which is north of Chicago, and my aunt still lived there at the time. And we went up there to visit my aunt, and it was the first time on Christmas I had ever seen snow.
There's something north of Chicago than Milwaukee.
Yes. Yeah. If you hit Kenosha, Wisconsin, you've gone just a bit too far, and you missed Zion.
So there's Zion. Mm-hmm. So you can go to Zion here in the United States.
You sure can.
Go to Illinois and pass through Chicago. If you're not carjacked.
Tolls.
Anyway, all right. You got a couple more weeks there in Kansas City, and then on to is that around Tampa, Clearwater area?
Just north of Tampa. Minutes north of the Tampa airport.
I got you. All right. Well, give us a good word from the Bible, Ray, this morning, if you would, brother.
So Marlene and I have been doing our Bible listening, and today we were cruising through Psalm 37, which everybody knows. Psalm 38 and Psalm 39. And it's always interesting, Tim, to listen to, you know, Psalm 37, heard it many, many times, sermons and Bible studies and stuff, but Psalm 38, David's in trouble. As you know, in a lot of the Psalms, David's in trouble. He's got enemies. They're howling wolves. They're wild animals. My enemies are all around me. And this is what it says. I don't think I'd ever, you know how you can, you know, Ed, how you can read something five times, and then the sixth time you go, I never saw that before.
Yep.
I had one of those moments. I never saw this before. And David here is talking about his enemies. My neighbors stand at a distance. Those who pursue my life set traps. Those who seek to harm me, they talk about my ruin all day long. They plot deception. And this is good now. This is what David said. I am deaf. I cannot hear. Like a mute person, I cannot open my mouth. I am like a man who cannot hear. No response comes from his mouth. And then the next verse says, yet I wait for you, Lord. You will answer, O Lord my God. Can I just say something? Sometimes we can't get better because we just won't stop talking. Sometimes we just can't get better when trouble comes because we got to talk about it and we got to talk about it. And somebody says something about us we don't like. And that happens all the time. Somebody hurts our feelings, and that happens almost every day. Somebody gives us a bad glance, and it ruins everything. It's interesting to me. David's response here is, it's really threefold. He says, number one, I'm not going to listen. Number two, I'm not going to speak. And number three, I'm going to wait on the Lord. One story. Years ago, I knew a Christian leader whose wife was a pretty well-known author, she was a well-recognized Christian author, and she had been badly attacked publicly, repeatedly, and this is probably almost 30 years ago. Just her name had been dragged through the mud, I wasn't in a close enough situation to make a judgment on what people were saying.
Yeah,
but I happened to see the husband. I said, how's your wife holding up? He said something interesting. He said, my wife has taken a vow of silence. She will not speak to her critics, but also she will not speak of her critics. She won't speak to them because they just want to argue, and she won't speak about them because it only hurts her own soul. I think that's exactly the spirit of what David is saying here. There are times when we just need to stop talking. We need to stop complaining and just sit still and wait on the Lord. And David says, you will answer, oh my God. So my friends, maybe there's one person out there who needs to hear this today. Let's not say everything that comes into our mind. Let's hold some things back. And above all, let's wait on the Lord. And when we do, in God's time, in just the right way, he will answer and he will deliver us.
Did you just come up with that just off the cuff, or just?
He got it from my article.
Okay, now that was that was outstanding.
Yes,
because
give me credit.
Okay, Tim, thank you so much. Thank
that was
so
a great article, Tim. Thank you. Okay.
I mean, I wasn't going to say anything, but you were word for word, right? Word
for word. I know, just literally word. I didn't even mention your name.
No, I'm kidding, folks. I didn't write anything like that. That was a great word
from
the Bible that Brother Ray shared with us. And, there are times.
Well, I mean, those things, when people say things about you, it hurts. And if you keep talking about it or you keep playing things over in your mind, you're simply getting that hurt over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of continues that kind of cycle of hurt, anger, bitterness. And, wow, that's just a powerful word, Ray. Excellent.
You know, but let's bring our friend Dr. Frank Turek in here. Frank's with us now. He's the author of I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist and the radio show by the same name, heard Saturdays at 9 o'clock Central Time, Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. Central Time on American Family Radio. And we replay that show on Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. Central Time. Good morning, Frank.
Howdy, folks. How is everyone?
Did you hear what Brother Ray was sharing?
I did, yeah. Brother Ray has learned much from you, Tim.
Yeah, well,
that was a great article.
I sound like I'm looking for credit. I'm really trying to be humble here.
Well, Tim, yes, I think people should read your new book, 10 Steps to Humility and How I Made It in 7.
How I Made It in 7.
Which is very humble of you, Tim, because you told me you actually made it in 6.
Yes.
That was a good one. I got to remember that one.
Well, he got that from my
from
article.
You, okay.
That's right.
Your article.
Word for word.
Okay.
Word actually got it from word. Ed.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Hey, Frank, I noticed where the buzz around where we are, we're, of course, in Tupelo, Mississippi, but Ole Miss is an hour away in Oxford, and a week from tomorrow, Vice President J.D. Vance and Erica Kirk, the widow of Charlie Kirk, will be on the campus there.
Good.
And they're going to be speaking at the, I think, the big the basketball arena, the pavilion that they call it at Ole Miss. So that tells me they're expecting thousands and thousands of people. Are you coming over for that? Or do you?
I'm not going to be at that one. I'm going to be where am I going to be?
Thursday night at
University of Georgia with a TPUSA event. And then I'll be at University of Alabama on the 13th of November. Before that, I'll be at Berkeley, UC Berkeley, on November 10th with a TPUSA event.
Now, you and some other friends of Charlie are doing some of the events that he would have been. Is that right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thankfully, you know, Erica said this show's going to go on, and it should, obviously. We're not going to let evil derail good.
Right.
So we're going to all these universities, continuing that. And we're bringing friends. I'm going to be actually at Berkeley. I'm going to be with Rob Schneider. I was supposed to be with Charlie, obviously.
The actor. And comedian.
Saturday Night Live actor that actually wrote a book on free speech.
Mm-hmm. So when is that? When is that event?
That's going to be November 10th.
Are you going to be at Alabama? And you're going to be at the University of Georgia, Athens?
University of Georgia, Athens, this Thursday, 7 p.m. Details on the website. Then we have Ohio State on November 3rd. Then we have Berkeley on November 10th. And then we have University of Alabama on November 13th.
So Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State, you're trying to hit the top five in college football.
That's right.
Right.
Then Boise State, which they're not.
They've fallen off.
But that's going to be November 20th.
Boise State. Anyway, in all seriousness, where can people read about the events and where they're –
If they go to crossexamined.org, click on calendar or events. I think it probably says events.
It says events.
You'll see it there.
Yeah. Hey, are you worried at all about security speaking at these places?
Well, since Charlie, we've had to hire private security, not just for my safety, but for the safety of the audience. So, unfortunately, it used to cost us like about $5,000 to go to a campus, you know, with the airfare, the hotels, the transportation, paying the guy that does all the video for us. Now it's $15,000.
Oh, wow.
So every place, every college we go, it's an extra $15,000. So I'm letting all our donors know if you want to, because we don't charge students anything, you know, it's free. So if you want to help us, just go to crossexamined.org, click on donate, you'll see it there.
You looking at Frank's website right now?
I am, crossexamined.org. And if you go to events, there's a drop-down menu, and you just click on cross-examine calendar. And it has it has Frank's events coming up. As well as when he appears, for example, he has today's issues listed for today. So wherever he's going to be speaking, he's got conferences coming up. You can check that out at crossexamined.org.
It's not so much a question, but just something I would like to say. I appreciate Frank for going to places like Berkeley, because a lot of people, they hear things about Berkeley or California in general, maybe Illinois, New York City, things like that, and they roll their eyes, just let them all leave the U.S. and stuff like that. But I appreciate the fact that Frank goes to places like Berkeley, because people and Christians need somebody like Frank to go to them and to speak to them and to let them know they're not the only person.
Because they are there.
Yes. We shouldn't forget the people. There are God-fearing Christians in California.
Mm-hmm. Seven.
You know,
there's seven.
I know it's going to be hard to believe, but there's more Christians in California than any other state.
Oh, there are more people, too.
Yeah, because there's like 39 million people there. So
Yeah.
Listen, Frank's been going to college campuses long before Charlie Kirk did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Charlie learned a lot and wanted Frank to help him with debating and things of that nature, and also the defense of the Christian belief system and yeah. the resurrection and so forth. Frank shared about that last time. So anything, what do you got coming up on, what are you doing with your program now that your world's been changed here?
Well, I just spent 2 weeks. We were in Israel, Jordan, and Egypt. I just got back. So, this weekend we're going to have, Robert Furrow on. He's a pastor in Tucson that we did an event with Charlie there last year, and he's about to do an event tonight out in Tucson. We're going to talk about that this weekend on the American Family Radio Network. What can we do now? You know, hearts are tender now. People are open to Christianity. Now's the time to move. Now's the time to go out and talk to people and to bring them into the church, bring them into Christianity. And so we're going to talk about how to do that this weekend.
So how long were you in Israel and Egypt?
It was a 2-week trip. It was scheduled before Charlie was murdered, so I couldn't back out because people right. would have lost a lot of money.
Right. Ray, do you have any questions for Frank?
I have one when he's done.
Okay. Well, we'll go Ray and then Ed.
Okay.
How about that? Ray, can you hear me?
Yeah. Frank, you just said that hearts are tender. Talk mm-hmm. about that. I'm hearing this from a lot of people around the country. Honestly, I'm seeing it as I'm traveling around doing my speaking conferences. Things have changed. Hard to put your finger on it, but it feels like the spiritual temperature, the openness of, particularly among young people, has changed since Charlie's murder and what has happened afterwards. Talk about that a little bit deeper. What's going on in the hearts of American young people?
And that was my question as well. So this is a two.
Well, that's because Ray
one.
Read your article, Ed.
Yes, that's right.
That's a great article, too.
Whatever that article was.
Yeah.
No, we did 4 events right after Charlie's murder at college and high school campuses, and I think that the tone has shifted from skepticism to, how do I bring my non-Christian friends to Christ? So they're more evangelistic questions now. So that's a good sign. Bible sales are up. Church attendance is up. I'm getting emails. I know TPUSA is getting a lot more about people becoming Christians because of what happened to Charlie and his example. It turns out, contrary to popular opinion, politics is an on-ramp to Christianity, not an off-ramp to Christianity. In other words, when people get engaged politically, and they're already, say, conservatives, but they're not Christians, eventually they're going to want to follow the stream of justice back to its source, and that source is, of course, Jesus. That source is God himself. And when people out there who are conservative or even moderate see someone like Charlie standing up and then he's murdered for his beliefs, that's inspiring to people, that people will go, wow, this guy put it all on the line and he wasn't afraid to interact with people. Maybe there's more to this. In fact, Charlie told me this like a month before he died, that he got a call from a billionaire who's an atheist, who said, wow, you're the smartest Christian I know. Maybe I need to look into Christianity.
Wow.
Because, look, in the public square, the political conversation is much bigger than the spiritual conversation, right? In the sense that it's on the news all the time. In fact, the only time the media covers Christianity is when there is a vote or when some high-profile Christian falls. That's the only time they cover Christianity. You know, they're not covering all the great works that pastors and church members are doing, you know, continually. Right. They only cover when something goes wrong. But the political conversation's always going on. So if you're a high-profile Christian in the political conversation, you're standing for Jesus like Charlie did, that's going to bring a lot of people into the kingdom.
Amen.
Well, and it seems like, Frank, that it's becoming clearer and clearer to people, even people who are just on the periphery of politics and culture. They're just living their lives on maybe on either side. But it's becoming clearer and clearer that the divide in our country is not bridgeable, because these are two mutually exclusive ways of looking at the world. Mm-hmm. And so when people start to like you said, I love the way you put it. It's a, you know, it's an on-ramp. They begin to say, okay, well, this is what I've always believed, but why? Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that there were a lot of people 20 years ago or 25 years ago, whatever, having those kind of internal conversations and asking themselves, well, why do I believe that a person can change their gender? Why do I, and to your point, do I believe in anything strongly enough that I would give my life for it? I mean, these are deep, deep questions. And, it makes sense to me that people are starting to examine the foundations of their belief systems, maybe now more than 10 years ago, even.
And people who are bold encourage others. I was just talking to my friend John Stone Street over there at the Colson Center just a few minutes ago, and he was saying, you remember that guy Jack Phillips? You guys know who Jack Phillips is, right?
Mm-hmm.
The guy that wouldn't bake the cake.
Right.
That he was going to stand on
Colorado.
His Christian beliefs.
Yeah.
Right. You're not going to force me to support something that God finds abhorrent. I'm not going to do it. You know how many Christians told him, oh, well, just bake the cake. Be nice. Just bake the cake. Be nice. If he had done that, you'd have never heard his name.
Right.
Right. He didn't back down. He won the cases. And now people are encouraged by what he's done, and they're interested in Christianity more now because this guy put his whole livelihood on the line for his faith,
just like Charlie did. He's been fighting that battle for like a decade in the courts.
More than that.
Yeah. And they act like he's the only baker in Colorado.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So they try to set him up. Of
course.
They try to set him up. For those who don't know, we're talking about Jack Phillips. He's the bakery owner in Denver area, and they two homosexual was it lesbian or
no it was two guys
they you know, they got 1,000 places they can get a cake decorator for their quote wedding. Mm-hmm. And they decided to they were going to target this Christian, and if he didn't make it, they were going to sue him,
right?
And that he went through that for, I'm just reminding people who maybe have not heard that story. Yeah. But most people have. But anyway, he ultimately won at the Supreme Court under religious liberty and religious freedom, First Amendment issues. So he stuck with his guns, as our friend Frank says right there, and ultimately won the case. All right, well, that's coming up. So, Frank, if you want to join Frank this Saturday, he will be on the air with I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist right here on American Family Radio at 9 o'clock Central Time. In the morning, and then that's what AM means, right? Still, I think
still,
so.
Absolutely.
And then Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. Central Time on AFR. Well, Ray, Frank, we'll pray for you, brother, as you travel around the country, and if you, Tuscaloosa is just 2 hours from us, so if you get a chance, come over and see us, okay?
You come over and see me, man. I'm coming all the way to Alabama.
Well,
you can't drive two hours?
Okay, I walked right into that
one. You sure did.
Yeah,
hey,
I would come over.
Enjoy your Saturday, Tim.
I think I got a little bit down in my back right now.
I'll come meet you, Frank. You'll know it's me when you hear my cowbell.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, Tim, next time the phone doesn't ring, it's me.
Okay. Okay. All right, Frank, you take care, my friend. Okay?
Thanks, guys.
Okay, that's Frank Turek.
And folks, please pray for Frank.
Yeah,
you know,
seriously.
Yeah, seriously.
Frank Turek. Frank is traveling the country. He was. For those who don't know, Frank was with Charlie Kirk when he was assassinated, and was in the car that took him to the hospital.
And started CPR on him too.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that's why I mentioned that.
He was a friend. They were friends.
Yes.
He was a mentor to Charlie early on.
That's why I mentioned to Frank, don't want to get into too much of it because it's painful to talk about. But there was, Ray, that was, you know, a life-altering day for Frank, you know, for all of us who watched, but certainly for Frank, his close friend, watching his close friend die like that, you know?
Yeah, young married man with young wife and two kids.
By the way, whatever happened to his assassin?
That story's almost disappeared, hasn't it?
Yeah.
We haven't heard anything.
Well, I'm sure he'll go on trial or just has he made a confession? Do we know?
I don't think so.
Okay.
There's no confession, I don't think.
Okay.
So well, it's just, and, it's just Utah, going through the
– In Utah, you get the death penalty for
what
he did. And they said they will pursue it.
Yeah. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the life growing inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she'll choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, and helping them choose life and sharing truth. Friend, this is not a time to be silent. It's a time for courage, for truth, for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby, to help her choose truth and life. Donate today. Call pound 250 and say baby. That's pound 250 baby. Or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Hey, welcome back up. Pardon me. Welcome back up. What happened? I don't know what happened right there. I need to reset.
Yeah, I can tell you what happened. You were eating popcorn on the way in, and someone ran down the wrong pipe.
Yeah.
Duly noted.
I keep telling you to drop that habit.
I know.
But
you can't. You can't give it up.
Oh, the popcorn's so good, man.
It is. No lie.
It's not even a temptation of sin, really.
No, it's not. It's the best popcorn I've ever had. I'm just going to tell you.
It is.
I've had movie popcorn, popcorn I've made myself.
You just catch it as it pops out with a bag. Here.
It's like right? Catching clouds of delight as it.
That's what I'm talking about.
Ooh, I'm liking it.
Oh, yeah. It is awesome.
It is really is
awesome
amazing.
Popcorn. And we got our own popcorn machine that we bought.
Yeah.
Two here a couple years ago.
After we, one of the local Presbyterian churches, we borrowed theirs and basically ran it into the ground.
Yeah. We had it for 10 years, I think, and we used it up and we gave it back to them.
The only time they came back to get it was around All Saints Day, Reformation Day, and they would come and borrow it, and it would be gone from our office for like 3 days. Mm-hmm. And you should have seen, you talk about people feeling entitled. I'd walk by and I go, "Where's the popcorn?" Oh,
they took their popcorn machine back.
Lawndale Presbyterian Church took their popcorn machine back.
Right, that's back when you could say Indian Giver, but you can't. You can't say that anymore. You know that. I'm not saying it.
Yeah, you're not saying.
I'm not saying it. I'm saying that's when you could say it.
Because we can't say it.
That's right.
But okay.
So what? We got a new machine. Is that?
Yeah.
What
we bought our own.
Yeah. I came in the day that the previous machine had gone kaput, and I walked in and I saw five very solemn-looking people standing there around the machine, and I was like, "What happened?"
The popcorn machine died. That's what happened. We're having a service. Show some respect.
The popcorn machine died.
All right, you're listening to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, Chris, and Ray. All right, what do you got, Chris?
Well, Vice President J.D. Vance has just wrapped up remarks. He is in Israel, where the Trump administration has dispatched the vice president to...
They dispatched him?
They did. They sent him there to oversee the peace deal or ceasefire agreement between Israel and Hamas. Depending on the news outlet that you follow, you'll get different interpretations of what Vice President J.D. Vance had to say today. For example, MSNBC says... Vance says, if Hamas doesn't comply with deal, very bad things will happen. CNN, I feel confidence the peace will last. Vance, very optimistic about peace deal on Fox News. Here is some audio that our Steve Jordahl cut for us while we were talking to Frank Turek.
The Israeli government has been remarkably helpful in this. I want to thank them, thank our Israeli partners, and all the folks particularly who are working hand in hand with their American friends here at the CMCC. And number two, I want to say that there is this weird attitude I've sensed in the American media and the Western media where there's almost this desire to root for failure, that every time something bad happens, that every time that there's an act of violence, there's this inclination to say, oh, this is the end of the ceasefire. This is the end of the peace plan. It's not the end. It is, in fact, exactly how this is going to have to happen when you have people who hate each other, who have been fighting against each other for a very long time. We are doing very well. We are in a very good place. We're going to have to keep working on it.
Well, I mean, I think it's okay for people to be cynical about it. The Middle East has earned that reputation. But at the same time, the vice president's right. We, you know, you got to give this time to play out. I'm looking now because all the four news outlets that we have in studio, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, and BBC, they're all talking about Vice President's visit. But I'm looking at pictures of, I guess this is Gaza City, but my goodness, it is just, like you said, Tim, it's just rubble. I mean, there is, I don't know how, there's just nowhere for those people to live. It's really stunning how this war has torn that place apart. But, you know, Ray, I'm good with people being cynical and giving it, giving the peace plan a chance. I mean, it's better than just, it's better than war. So let's give peace a chance.
Okay, I'm going to say not cynical, just skeptical.
Yeah.
They've been fighting over there since the days of Ishmael and Isaac.
Yeah.
4,000 years. The depth of ancient hostility, I mean, Ed, it goes back centuries and centuries. I like President Trump, go on the record, happy to say that. Wish him all the best, okay?
Yeah.
Wish him all the best and hope this peace and treaty holds. But you got at least, ask yourself, do you trust Hamas? No.
Right.
Hezbollah? No. Palestinian Authority? No. Our friends in Qatar? That's a hard sentence to say. Our friends in Qatar? You know, do we really trust them? The Muslim Brotherhood? There's a lot of
ISIS.
Bad actors.
ISIS, the
right?
Taliban, I mean.
That's right. There's a lot of bad actors over there, right, who want to see this thing fail. So I hope, and plus you've got Prime Minister Netanyahu. He's not going to take anything, you know.
Right.
If they attack, he's going to hit them right back. Sort of a, you send one of ours to the hospital, we're going to send one of yours to the morgue. The Chicago rules, so
yes,
to speak.
Yes, that's right.
So I think it's perfectly good for Christians to say we pray for the peace of Jerusalem. We're commanded to pray for peace in Jerusalem and the peace in the Middle East. We wish the president all the best. We're just skeptical, but right, Ed, we'll wait and see. Maybe this time there'll be lasting peace.
Like I said last week, I'll take 5 years of peace.
Yeah, fine.
Yep.
5 years is an eternity. That's an eternity of peace in the Middle East.
That's better than 5 years of people dying. So
that's exactly right.
Even if it's not permanent, we all know, biblically speaking, it can't be permanent. But, you know, 5 years, 10 years, who wouldn't take that?
Sure.
I would.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens there. How about that?
All right.
Sounds good to me.
We'll see what happens there Israel, in the Middle East.
We hope it works out.
Yep.
I didn't understand President Trump giving that executive order to protect Qatar, though.
Yes.
You see that?
Yeah, I did. Somebody sent it around this morning. It was Chris. You sent it?
Yeah, I'm going to pull it up here.
Yeah. So, Ray, I don't know if you got that.
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I looked it over. I...
I want to tell people what it is first.
Go ahead, Chris.
Chris,
all right.
Over to you, Chris.
Yes. So back in September, President Trump signed an executive order on September 29th, 2025, saying that the U.S. and the state of Qatar have been bound together by close cooperation, shared interest, and the close relationship between our armed forces. In this executive order, President Trump said the United States shall regard any armed attack on the territory, sovereignty, or critical infrastructure of the state of Qatar as a threat to the peace and security of the United States. In the event of such an attack, the U.S. shall take all lawful and appropriate measures, including diplomatic, economic, and if necessary, military, to defend the interests of the United States and of the state of Qatar and to restore peace and stability. The reason we're talking about this is because this executive order came at a time in which Israel and Qatar were going back and forth militarily, diplomatically, over issues involving things like Hamas. So it looked as though President Trump was saying we will defend Qatar if places like even Israel were to attack them.
That's what he says. That executive order is ridiculous and should never been signed by President Trump. And I don't know what he was thinking right there, given Qatar, who's been, that's what I call him, who's been housing Hamas.
Yeah.
Right.
Give them a NATO type protection. And when they're the chief enemy, not chief enemy, when Israel had to bomb, they did. They bombed into Qatar one time because they were trying to take out these Hamas leaders that they knew where they were. But I don't know what Trump's thinking on that one. That's just nutty.
Well, right, and there. President Trump, I don't know, I want to say made, but encouraged Israeli Prime
had
Minister
Biden, had
Benjamin.
Biden done, had Biden done this, we would be screaming from the rooftops.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Oh, yeah.
President Trump kind of compelled Benjamin Netanyahu to apologize to Qatar for bombing Hamas.
I was surprised that Israel did that in a way, because that is amping it up a little bit, you know, when you attack a sovereign nation. But
it is amping it up.
But we did, sure, too. We went into Iran and bombed their nuclear facilities. So, sure. I mean, it happens.
And we're blowing.
Well, Ray, what do you think about Trump giving signing an executive order, giving Qatar all this protection?
The only way I can think of it is Mr. Trump, maybe his greatest diplomatic skill, he's a deal maker, right? The art of the deal. He's good at that. I mean, legitimately good at that. And so he figured to make the deal come together, but Gaza, Israel, Egypt, Jordan, Syria, you got a lot of players there, right? Yeah, and the U.S. and the UAE, Saudi Arabia, he had to provide some kind of guarantees to Qatar. The rest of us look at it and we just, I shake my head. I'm with you, Tim. I don't see the benefit of this at all. But I suppose the president thought,
well, you got to have principles somewhere. I understand President Trump's a deal maker and the art of the deal, and he calls everything a deal. He's talking about Ukraine. That's how he's.
It's all a deal.
He views international relations, and I'm not being totally critical of him by any means.
Right.
But international relations, like he's talking about Ukraine and Russia. He's talking about we're trying to make a deal. That's what he said yesterday. Yeah. So he's dealing back and forth, trying to get, trying to get both sides to agree to something so that a deal is struck, so to speak.
Well, I mean, you could certainly see this happening, this scenario, where Trump is trying to get Qatar to control Hamas leaders and to encourage them to sign on to this deal. And Qatar says, well, why should we? Israel just attacked, Doha and killed these. And then Trump says,
that's very believable.
And then Trump says to Qatar, okay, let me handle it. And he goes to Benjamin Netanyahu, hey, we're going to have a deal here. You got to promise not to attack Qatar again. And I'm going to give them a guarantee that no one's going to do that. We're on their side as well as your side. I can absolutely see all that happening behind the scenes.
Yeah,
because that's
and
how
it
you
doesn't
get the
make
deal
sense
done.
To the rest of us at
okay,
all.
Okay, exactly
what
I don't agree with it on principle.
Right,
that's what I'm saying. I don't agree with doing that on principle, because I think you can do things that that shouldn't be done. You shouldn't be saying to Qatar, we're going to give you military protection against Israel. You should not do that.
No, you're absolutely right. Because you say you're going to do that, and what happens if Israel says, I'm sorry, President Trump, we're going to have to hit them, and then what is now President Trump's in a corner.
Yeah.
What's he going to do? He's going to give Patriot missile systems to Qatar?
Yeah, I know. I mean, some things you don't do for principle purposes. And Trump has, so I don't know what. But that was what we quoted there was a real executive order.
I posted it on our Facebook page too, so people.
We're not making this up.
The only thing I can think of, and this is just a guess, is that the Trump administration was trying to do something to bring Qatar.
Is it Qatar or Qatar?
It's however you
it's
feel,
both.
Sir.
It's
now the people from there are called Qataris, so based on that, I say Qatar or. A variation of the word. But anyway, the only thing that I can think of is that this was an effort by Trump to bring them to the table and really get all the other pieces to start to fall in place for this peace deal in the Middle East. Because remember, he went to Egypt after he went to Israel and had a bunch of Arab countries there sign off on all this too. So that's the only thing I can think of. It's hard to get into the mind of Donald Trump, as we have discussed in this program.
You're on your own right there, Chris. We're not going to comment.
And I do want to let our listeners know, some of our listeners think any criticism of President Trump is...
You're going against God's anointed.
Disloyal and unpatriotic.
Disloyal. And listen, our loyalties to the truth and our loyalties to the Bible, I love 95% of what President Trump is doing and has done. Amen. I hope he succeeds with peace in the Middle East, even if it lasts 5 or 10 years, like the deal was made between Israel and Egypt way back, the Camp David Accords.
Okay.
So, but I want our listeners to know we approach this as journalists who are Christians. And so we have to speak when we think something is the wrong move because we're not lemmings. We're not going over
a
cliff for anyone.
Nobody.
Are you a lemming, too?
I'm not a lemming.
Chris?
I like them fried.
Ray?
No.
Tastes like
fried
chicken.
Fried lemming? Deep fried. Had
deep
them
fried
in the
lemmings.
Texas State Fair once. Deep fried lemmings. It was great.
Put a little hot sauce on it. It's really good.
Ed puts hot sauce on everything.
I do. I really do.
Popcorn, donuts. It doesn't matter.
Really? Not.
Like,
not
do you have a particular brand?
Donuts.
Not popcorn.
No, he's a hot. We all know hot sauce people in our lives, and Ed's one I know because he's two offices down from me, and I know what he's eating.
When I have eggs, I put hot sauce on Louisiana hot sauce, and Tim says I can smell that all the way down the hall.
That's right.
I don't want to judge you, but eggs and hot sauce. I don't know about that.
It on a hamburger.
At least it's not ketchup.
I think that's ketchup. Eggs. My dad
was wrong. That's wrong.
That was one of the things. Yeah, my dad would tell people straight up, and he wouldn't interfere with people's business too much. But if they put ketchup on eggs,
it's
gone too far. You've gone too far.
That's what I'm talking, Ray. He drew the line right there.
So we're all in agreement. I bet you could get Israel and Hamas to agree on that.
No ketchup on eggs.
You got to have some.
We're going to start right here.
Speaking of eggs, can I share an observation that I came across recently? And I already told this to Ray, but I was reading my Bible, and I happened to be in Job chapter 6 recently. And you know how sometimes you read things and you come across stuff and you're like, huh. But anyway.
Is that what Ray was talking about?
Yes. Yeah. Early on in the story of Job, he says, can that which is unsavory been eaten without salt? Or is there any taste in the white of an egg? So thousands of years ago, Job was completely against low-sodium cholesterol-free diet.
And if he had had a bottle of Louisiana hot sauce, it might have made him might have made his life a little bit easier.
Blessed be the name of the Lord.
You know what?
As he's sprinkling it on.
If his friends would have been real friends, they'd have brought him some Louisiana
hot
sauce.
They would have
brought him.
We all agree.
Yeah, terrible friends. Miserable comforters.
Right. We need to reel this back in.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm going to do it right now. I'm reeling back in.
Reel it.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues. Yes. That's the name of this show on the American Family Radio Network, Today's Issues. Tim, I'm Tim with Ed and with Chris and with Ray. Ray's in Kansas City. We're in Tupelo, and we Thank you for listening wherever you may be. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, keeping it with Israel or Israel-related matters for just a moment. We're about 2 weeks away from the New York City mayoral election. And one of the people in the news today that's warning about Zohran Mamdani, who appears to be...
you got to admit that's a great name, though, for like a superhero or something like
it,
that.
It is. Huh?
Yes.
Just the Zohran.
Or an evil villain.
Well,
that's right.
Yeah, somebody that might think he's more of an evil villain.
Sorry, but go ahead. You were good.
Way to reel things in, Tim.
Sorry.
Someone who may think he's more of an evil villain is New York City Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. He told Fox that Mamdani is dangerous. Clip 8.
I believe Zohran Mamdani poses a danger to the security of the New York Jewish community. Mamdani's refusal to condemn insightful slogans like globalize the intifada, his denial of Israel's legitimacy as a Jewish state, his call to arrest Israel's prime minister should he enter New York, and his thrice repeated accusation of genocide in Thursday's debate, for these and so many other statements, past, present, and unrepentant, he is a danger to the Jewish body politic of New York City.
I'm going to put him down as a no from Mamdani.
That's right.
Well, he was.
Who was that we were hearing?
Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove.
Okay.
Well, first of all, to say yes to what we just heard. Mamdani was just the last couple of days been criticized for a photo op where he was smiling, arm around the shoulder of an imam. I think this is a guy in New York, or he is just visiting. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this man's name, but he is pretty much assumed to be an extremist. Calling for genocide. But if you're a Jew living in New York City and you are seeing Mamdani as a danger to the Jews in New York City, you've got to be wondering if that accusation is enough to influence this election. And I don't think it is, because I think the anti-Semitic rhetoric and feelings in big cities like New York have grown to the point, Ray, I'll pitch it to you, have grown to the point where people, when you say, well, this mayoral candidate's anti-Semitic, they go, good, I'm anti-Semitic too. And if I was a Jew living in New York City, these would be scary times.
Well, we've talked before about how the landscape has changed since October the 7th, 2023, anti-Semitism, which, Ed, has been with us for thousands of years. It's become acceptable. It's become fashionable. It's become a badge of honor in certain circles. And so, in the big cities, places like New York City, suddenly you can be anti-Semitic and you can be elected to high office.
Yep.
It will be catastrophic if this... How do you pronounce his last name? Mamdani?
Mamdani.
Mm-hmm. Mamdani. It will be catastrophic for New York and thus for America if he becomes the mayor. I think this is an odd thing to say, I think the only way it doesn't happen, and this might not stop it, is if the Republican candidate, Curtis Sliwa, if he drops out, and then it becomes Mamdani versus Cuomo.
Yes.
And oddly enough, weird. Cuomo becomes the quote, conservative candidate in this election.
Yeah.
What a world we're living in.
It is strange. And not only is Mamdani apparently, allegedly, I want to be careful, anti-Semitic, but he's a communist who's going to bankrupt the city.
Right.
And so you choose your poison here. Mm-hmm. This guy is going to be a disaster for that city. But as Tim always says, we got great popcorn here. We're just going to pop some and just watch it unfold.
Right.
Because it'll be a lesson to the rest of the country. I hope the rest of the country's paying attention.
Now, who you have voting in this New York City election is New York City. It's proper, okay? Mm-hmm. Not the greater metropolitan New York area, which would include Long Island and New Jersey and all of that. So you're but there's a lot of Jews that live there.
Yeah.
I'm talking Brooklyn and the Bronx, and I know Brooklyn's a heavy Jewish population. Somebody once said there's the only place in the world, I mean, the second most Jewish populated place in the world besides Israel is New York City. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they held a very prominent place and a very prominent vote. So I don't know, I guess what I'm saying, it's amazing to me that even the idea of somebody as seemingly anti-Semitic, by the way, he's a big defund the police guy too.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
I mean, this guy's far left, okay? Far, far left. That's why Cuomo seems like a conservative.
Right.
Because he's a rational Democrat compared to Zoran Mondami. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. When is that election?
It's like 2 weeks from today.
Yeah. But we'll see what happens there. Next story, Chris. We got about 3 minutes left.
Yeah. Let's play a little bit of this because it factors into Jews in New York City and other places. There was a recent poll that Washington Post did a story on, and they say about 4 in 10 Jews in the U.S. say they now hide their Jewish identity because of anti-Semitism. A couple of Jewish ladies, American ladies, told Fox that Jews in the U.S. have nothing to be afraid of, except for maybe if they live in blue states. Clip 12.
I think it's a little ridiculous that people are asserting that they don't feel safe in America. This has always been such a beacon of safety and prosperity for American Jews. I think that they're projecting a little bit. My sons wear yarmulkes. My husband wears a yarmulke every single day. We don't take them off almost ever, except for in the middle of Antifa protests at Georgetown here in Washington. But I don't understand, you know, outside of Brooklyn where people are getting assaulted, why people feel that unsafe here.
The truth is that Donald Trump is the most pro-Jewish president we've ever had. And I think if you're feeling unsafe in America, which is, again, like Bethany said, always a beacon of safety and security for Jews, Donald Trump has been just nonstop about protecting Jews, both in America and in Israel. The most popular news program.
Those two ladies were Bethany Mandel and Carol Markowitz from a recent segment on Fox.
Go ahead.
Well, if you were a Jew living in the United States, especially in blue states, in blue cities, and on college and university campuses, you've got to be nervous because you just never know when this thing tips over the edge.
Sure.
And I don't like what's about to happen, probably about to happen to New York City, but sometimes you got to learn the hard way, and it seems like New Yorkers are going to have to go down that road.
All right, we'll be back momentarily. Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
For your contributions to this show this hour. Steve Paisley, Jordahl, is on the way in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.